Mississippi's TAN Talk. Entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Come on in, sit right down. Keep your hands up, keep your chin down. Shut the door, time to go with Randy Harrison. Knockout Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Knockout Radio with Randy Harris is about to start. So get ready for the best MMA talk, games, interviews, prizes, and surprises anywhere for Knockout Radio. I'm the voice, Ray Flores, and now here's Knockout Radio.
Hey-o. Hey, everybody.
What is going on, everybody? Coming to you live from Tournament de Pizza, as we do each and every Wednesday, with the new extended time of 1 to 4 Eastern Standard Time. Action-packed, as always, show today.
Yeah, you're packed. It's
yeah. See what he said? He said, I'm packed. All right. Okay. No, perfect.
We're packed.
No, you didn't say that.
What did I say?
You said, you're packed.
Yeah, you're packed.
Yeah, exactly. Mega star coming up here momentarily. After that, we're going to head up to Jacksonville for UFC Media Day, featuring Trevor Peak, your boy Phil Rowe, Jillian Robertson, a little inside track with her as her trainer and confidant, Dean Thomas. Dave Feldman coming on to talk about what recently happened. I think it was as early as yesterday with the stripping of Alan Belcher's belt. As we do each and every Wednesday, Jason Knight will be on. We'll talk a little bit about last night's episode as Team Chandler goes to 4-0.
Wow.
They're dominating.
We expected this, right?
I did. Obviously, Conor McGregor didn't. Because if Conor McGregor expected it, do you think he still would have gone with the future?
I mean, you think he cares? He's got so much going on. I mean, he missed the USADA deadline. And he's not going to fight in 2023. He's got these sexual allegations at the Miami Heat Finals Game 4 that he's dealing with. I mean,
how about the lawsuit with the Miami Heat mascot?
Yeah, he knocked out the mascot. Like, you know, like, I don't know. He just seems like he's so all over the place.
We're going to talk about all of that, but there is no better way to kick off our number one, and I'm so excited to welcome two-time Emmy Award winner, Loretta Swit. Loretta, how are you?
I'm terrific, and how are you doing?
We are all fantastic. A lot of things to talk about, so let's get right into it. I did my little bit of research, and I saw that you were involved with some sports, including co-captain of your high school basketball team.
Cheerleader. I was never into sports playing. I was not on a basketball team, no.
We need to change your Wikipedia then.
Oh, hon, there's so many things wrong on that. It's embarrassing. I don't want to, like, make fools of anybody, but they have me daughter of immigrants. My parents, they're dead now, so they don't care. But initially, it bothered them because they were born in New Jersey, you know. So, but, it's you know, what's the big deal? Nobody died. You're telling me what you read, and I'm telling you I was the cheerleader, but I was not on a basketball team.
And my daughter, who would be very, very upset with me if I didn't clarify and say cheerleading is also considered a sport.
Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely.
I think probably now the gymnastics that they do are just they're wonderful. God, it's wonderful to watch. It's entertainment.
And the athleticism, you know, that I'm sure you're aware of, and, you know, now they do all of the cheerleading contests on ESPN and things that you have to do, whether you're going to like this one, whether you're the base or the flyer or what, you know, position you have in the cheerleading.
Right.
Like that, huh?
I think that's great. I think that's just great. It shows that we keep moving forward. Like dance, for example, ballet from Pavlova to now is the growth, the change, and advances is remarkable.
Absolutely. And as we were talking or starting to talk sports and the competitiveness of sports, talk about the competitiveness of what you do, it, being in the acting world, how competitive that is.
I don't think I'm speaking just for myself. Our main competition is always ourselves. You're always trying to be better than your last show, better than your last performance, better than your, because we have a saying that we're only as good as the last performance. So I think the competition is healthy. You're competing with yourself to keep growing and getting better. And acting styles also have advanced and developed. And I think that's great. You know, one of my favorite sayings, and I won't even tell you who said it, maybe you can guess. My favorite saying is, there are no limits. There are only plateaus. But you must not stay there. You must go beyond them.
Interesting.
Isn't that great?
Isn't
that totally great?
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, it definitely is. Now, you said that you're only as good as your last performance. One of my favorite TV shows of all time, and it's not what you think, even though I like that one as well. You were on The Pyramid, and I'm curious, how did you do on The Pyramid, and what number was it? It's now the $100,000 Pyramid. What was it back then?
Right. I think it was $100,000. I think it was $100,000 Pyramid. Or was it less? It was maybe the $10,000 Pyramid. I loved The Pyramid best of all. I think the others were not as challenging. And and Dick Clark was the host for many years, and I adored him. I loved playing Pyramid. Dick at one point said that I was giving away the most money of everyone that far. Of course, that's years ago. But I was winning for the competition, you know, the people who came on the show.
Right.
And that was great. You know, that's a great outreach for the show.
Any chance of you coming on the new version with Michael Strahan?
I don't think so. Where are they doing it? Wait,
New York City.
In California?
No, it's New York City.
Is it in New York?
Yeah.
I don't know. See, I don't have anything to do with those things. The agency does everything. And they've never approached me to be on. So I have no immediate plans to do that. They would have to approach my agent is how it works.
I got you. And the difference between it, and I'd like to get your opinion on this as we were talking about the Pyramid and how you're helping to win for the contestants, that's the difference.
Right.
And I used to be a big fan of Match Game, where a lot of the celebrities would go on there, and instead of trying to get the answer to match the contestant, they would try to be funny, which you knew that the contestant didn't have that answer, and it was costing the contestants money.
Let me point out that the challenge of playing the game is why I liked the Pyramid. You really, you played a game. You were working and trying to win. And Match Game was a lot of fun. It was just a joke and joking and a lot of fun. You know, it was different from the other games. It was entertainment.
For sure. For sure. Since I did my research legally as well, and since the statute of limitations is long past, I can now let you know that my wife, who's been a nurse for over 43 years, called out sick on February 28th,
1983. Oh, my. Bless her heart. Oh, my.
Along with millions and millions of other people as well, as obviously that was the finale of some TV show called MASH.
What a lovely thing to say. What a woman. What a woman. Boy, you better do your best to deserve that, woman.
Oh, believe me, I try every day, and I will never do everything I need to do for her, for sure. Talk about that experience. Obviously, you were involved in many, many shows, very well known for the Hot Lips character. Talk about what that whole time period was like being on MASH.
You know, if I may interject this, while during that time period, I was somewhat limited in terms of having time to watch other shows. And for the past, maybe 20 years or so, I've been trying to catch up with some of the remarkable shows that were on that I missed. And one in particular, I would tune in to in the rerun categories now, because I did three episodes of this show, and I thought, what's fun, I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch years of their shows, their episodes, and catch three of my own. And it's interesting to look back, you see what you did, how you did it, how you looked, what you wore, and it's like going to school. It's wonderful. And I was really so impressed with so many of the performances. They really knocked me out. These actors were so good. They were so giving and warm and wonderful. And I was just, I really think that they're my favorite people in the whole world. I love actors. I love what we give.
How much, I don't think that fans understand what goes into a performance, how much you study, you know, whether it's reading the lines, practicing the performance. Explain that to the people, you know, what you through.
You know, but wait a minute, so what? They're there to enjoy the fruit of our labor, so to speak. You know what, they don't have to know necessarily how long we've studied, some of us for years, you know, speaking for myself, I and we keep growing, hopefully, because acting is the study of human behavior, which, of course, keeps evolving and changing and growing, which is why...
Okay. Her phone dropped. We will call back after I got reprimanded.
Yes, you did. Yeah, and now you have to appreciate your wife even more than you already do.
I don't know if that's possible.
Oh, you're going to have to work on it.
I don't know.
Loretta told you.
Well, I understand that. But, you know, you've been around the family.
Yes. I'm in the circle.
Well, you're not.
I'm there.
No. You might be able to draw a circle.
The table's round for a reason. That's why we sit at the round table.
Like King Arthur?
I mean, when Loretta comes back, I mean, to be a part of such an iconic show. I mean, I was a little young for MASH. I mean, it was the 70s, early 80s, you know, when it ended in 83, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
You know, so I didn't really know what war was, you know, so I caught on to it later, obviously. But from what I understand, it was up there with, like, the Dallas.
Dynasty. And during that period, it was the most iconic show ever.
Right.
You know, and yeah, it would definitely go up there with Seinfeld,
right.
You know, and that massive finale. The emotional, you know, if you haven't seen the finale, you know, the emotional ending. And it was just a tremendous, tremendous show. We have Loretta Swit back on. Loretta, are you there?
I am here.
Apologize for that. So go ahead and finish. You were talking about, you know, fans watching the show.
I thought you asked a very interesting question about getting to explain to the audience what goes into a performance or creating a character. While it might be interesting to some, I think part of what we do is, I don't want to say magical, but I don't know that you'd really want to necessarily know what goes into creating a Margaret Houlihan, for example, or a Shirley Valentine, or a Mame, or some of the characters that I've been privileged to do. I don't know that my explaining what I did to get to that place is as satisfying as just watching the performance. Maybe they don't want to go necessarily backstage or inside. You know, I don't know. But when I give master classes, it's obviously different because you're talking to people who are interested in knowing how to do, you know, it's a how-to thing. But for the audience, I would love for them to just sit back and kick off the shoes and relax and laugh or cry or tap your toes to the music or whatever. So it's interesting to talk about from that point of view. I don't know that it would necessarily improve their enjoyment of the finished product. You know, just maybe it would make it more interesting, but maybe they don't want to know that. Maybe they want to see the finished product. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. Yeah. And maybe I'm thinking that way. My daughter, who was the cheerleader in high school, has a theater degree from UCF. And so, you know, I look at it, you know, from her eyes now. She didn't go and use that degree. She's using a different degree now. But that's why it intrigued me. But yeah, I know I totally understand what you're saying.
But see, you're not typical audience.
I've been told I'm not typical by a lot of people.
Well, they're wrong. No, you're not the typical audience. You have a vested interest. You have True. A daughter in the business, and you're watching her study. You're watching her evolve into this performer or what have you, whatever. You know, so that's a whole different thing. By the same token, I had a brother who majored in accounting at Fordham. He was, you know, super brave. And the furthest thing from comedy or drama or getting on a stage. And so when he sat in the audience, he was dazzled that his little baby sister was up there performing. I don't think, to talk to him about how I got there, you know, what I did to develop the character that he was dazzled with was going to make him enjoy it anymore. I mean, he was just dazzled. And I think that's a wonderful experience, to just be dazzled and not necessarily, it's like taking a vitamin and not knowing what's in it. It's just, it's a vitamin and it's good for you and swallow, you know. And I don't necessarily care about all the nutrients and the thing and the stuff, you know, just, you know, I had an acting coach once who said, you do all the work, okay? You're developing your character, right? You're doing all these things that goes into this character. He likened it to taking a bite of a piece of fruit, an apple, let's say, and you didn't necessarily know as you bit into it and all the juices and you're chewing and the meat and the thing and the skin and the thing and you're digesting it, it's going down the throat and into the body, and you didn't have to know exactly what that whole process was in hygiene or biology or whatever. But that bite was delicious.
So Loretta, Matt here, my question is going back to the 20 years of rediscovering shows that you had missed during your iconic career. Is there anything that we should go back and watch as a community, or something you discovered on your own that you were like, wow, that was really brilliant?
Oh, well, I appreciated these people for a long time, but by all means, now that you have streamings and reruns and Hulus, and I mean this endless entertainment out there going far back, and you can reacquaint yourself with those people. They're some of them genius performances that we now have, thank God, on celluloid and forever. Yes, for example, I think Tony Shalhoub, who fortunately is still with us and active and acting, is a genius. He's a genius. Monk was a genius show. It was beyond clever and demanding of this man and his gifts, and they are gifts. Peter Falk, he was faultless. His performances had no crinkles, no wrinkles or crinkles. He was just absolutely perfection doing that character, creating that character, which, because I knew Peter, couldn't have been further from the real Peter Falk. That's why I'm not sure, knowing the work, I don't know if it would add to the fascination. You know, I think just to accept Columbo the way he was, I think the mystery they kept around Columbo, you never saw his wife. You didn't even know if she was real, because he made up things to catch you. You know, if you're the murderer, if you're the perpetrator, he would make little traps for you. And so, but Peter was totally brilliant. And you look at his, yes.
No, I'm going to say there's a lot of those characters from yesterday when I was watching TV before Matt was born, that he should go back, you know, and watch. But I want to touch base on, before we run out of time, you're coming to the Tampa Bay area the end of next month, July 28th through the 30th, for the
yes.
Tampa Bay Comic Convention.
Yes.
Talk about that. And ironically, I reached out to my brother today, who lives in Atlanta. Today's his birthday. I was going to wish him a happy birthday. And he said he met you at the Comic-Con in Atlanta recently. So talk about the Comic-Cons, the conventions, where you get to go meet a lot of these fans.
Right. You know, the Comic-Con is kind of a left-handed compliment. It's like Chiller. We have a big Comic-Con, if you will, called Chiller. And it began with that name because initially, they gathered all the actors who had been in horror movies, like Linda Blair. She was always there signing for The Exorcist, stuff like that, you know. But anyway, it kept the name though, so Chiller stayed with it. So as did Comic-Con, the comics, the comic books, and so on. But what it really is this gathering of who's who in the industry, meeting fans and making friends, and it's glorious. I mean, for, as my mother would say, a chatterbox. It takes Loretta to 5 minutes just to clear her throat. You know, she just talks and talks and talks. So for me, it's like dying and going to heaven, meeting all these people who, and Jamie too, we sit there and people come to us and tell us how the impact our characters and the shows have had on their lives. This is extraordinary, to live with so many people who feel like your family. So I love doing the cameos. I love doing the appearances, because the outreach is so spectacular.
And that's coming up the end of next month, like I said, July 28th through the 30th here in Tampa. Before we run out of time, I do want you to talk about your jewelry, the perfume
right.
line that you have, as
yeah.
well as the book,
yeah.
Sweetheart,
yeah.
which all benefits animal yeah. charities.
That's right. For me, appearances like that, or, well, not cameos so much, but because I don't generally talk about my charity on the cameos. It's all about you, you know, the cameo. Is all about your birthday, your anniversary, or, you know, whatever. But the appearances, it always comes up that I have a charity, and people like to contribute to that, even if they don't get something, you know, they want to make a donation to the charity and so forth. So it's, for me, it's a real boon to go and enjoy myself, but also get out there for the animals and for my charity. And I'm on all kinds of social media. People can always find the charity and do something. But my website, for example, will feature my oil paint, my watercolors, and my book, which is now ending the second printing. I'm about to write the second book. And it's done very, very well. It has a lot about me, MASH, and features a lot of my watercolors, mostly of animals. And all of the proceeds go into my charity. I now have a perfume. My trademark, if you will, or my whatever they're calling it these days, is Sweetheart. One word. And it's always, how shall I say, everything is about a heart, which is, of course, the core of our being. So Sweetheart perfume comes in a heart-shaped bottle, and the jewelry that it has a heart, and it has my birthstone colored your birthstone. In other words, you can order my birthstone is topaz. The initial color can be colorless. It's a white colorless. And so you can order a garnet. So it's a garnet colored topaz. And that's fun because it's meeting people like a friend, you know, and talking about their birthday and their birthstone. And, you know, so we put everything out there, emerald colored topaz. And so it's creative, it's colorful, it's fun, and people love it.
What's the website where people can make the donation and possibly pick up some of these items?
Sweetheart.
And it's .org, correct?
Sweetheart.org, correct.
Perfect. Loretta, thank you very much for your time. Hopefully, we'll be able to meet up when you come to Tampa. We've got credentials. We're going to cover the event, and we will come out and say hi.
That would be great. I'd love to meet you.
Awesome. Thank you for your time. That is the legend right there, Loretta Swit, known for many things. I'm going to drop some bombshells on you of some of the research that I did of some other characters that she played. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we return. This is Knockout Radio, brought to you by 8 Man Strong and Staff Sergeant.
Hi, this is Herschel Walker, and I tell everyone out there listening, y'all need to listen to Knockout Radio.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
8-Man Strong is not simply about the biggest or strongest. It's about those who have survived true lows, suffered, faced demons real or in their heads, and are fighting to come back against it all. If you live with a passion for greatness and strength and resilience towards all obstacles that may attempt to derail you, if you're bold and aggressive in the pursuit of the things you want in life, if you are meant to overcome everything that stands in your path of reaching your goals, then you are 8-Man Strong.
Ready to take charge of your day? Bucked Up energy drinks are taking over the energy drink market. Find them at Walmart, Publix, GNC, and Vitamin Shop. Real energy and real focus. Get bucked up!
Saturday, June 24th. The UFC returns to Jacksonville. The heavy-handed Josh Emmett looks to turn back undefeated phenom Ilia Topuria, plus dangerous Brazilian Amanda Ribas. Takes on the future Macy Barber. Don't miss UFC Fight Night. Emmett versus Topuria, live from ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
You're hungry, where do you go to eat?
Berg Sports Bar and Grill.
You want to have a drink? Where do you go?
Berg Sports Bar and Grill.
Having a get-together with the guys from the softball team? Where do you do it?
That's right, Berg Sports Bar and Grill.
Located at 1320 Central Avenue, St. Petersburg, right across from Tropicana Field, Berg's is the best place to take the whole family for food and fun. Going to a Rays game? Have dinner before the game at Berg's, and after the Rays win, come and celebrate with all your friends at Berg's, right across from the Trop. So come down and see Berg and the whole gang at Berg Sports Bar and Grill.
Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
Construction companies always face hiring challenges. Do you need temporary help on your project? Or maybe you want a true partner for all of your staffing needs? StaffZone is construction staffing excellence, providing both skilled and general labor positions. And we want to work for you. For all of your construction staffing needs, call us at 877-247-ZONE or visit us online at thestaffzone.com to find your local branch. Our staffing professionals are eager and ready to earn your business. That's 877-247-ZONE.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's Joel Romero here and the Knockout Radio.
Hello again. Hello. Hello again.
All right, we are back coming to you live from Tournament to Pizza. We're going to go to the phone lines in about 12 seconds.
Okay.
Do you know another character that Loretta Swit played? Did you ever hear of? You
Donna.
Probably didn't see.
Donna.
Did you ever hear of the TV show Cagney and Lacey?
Oh, yeah.
Very popular show back in the day. She was the original Christine Cagney.
Oh.
And then due to, I did my little bit of research, hopefully it was right.
Okay.
And she had other obligations. She was in the beginning of it, like the, you know, where they do the first film of it. It got picked up, and then they had to replace her because she wasn't able to carry on the character.
She was also Donna on Gunsmoke.
She was on a lot of things.
Yeah.
I'm just glad that she took the pyramid, and it was the $10,000 pyramid, seriously. Let's head up to Jacksonville, where we will be this weekend, and welcome our first fighter of the week, Trevor Peak. Trevor, how are you?
Man, I'm doing great. I just pretty much got my last training session in. Now I'm just going to rest and get ready to cut this weight, and then the hard work will be over with, and just get ready to have some fun.
Before we talk about fight week and we talk about the fight on Saturday, tell us a little bit about yourself. I saw your very impressive first time in the octagon. And like I said, tell us a little bit about you.
I'm from the northeast corner of Alabama. I currently live in Chattanooga. I mean, I started fighting at a young age. I mean, I got in the octagon first time when I was 15. I found out about the fight the day of and got my parents to sign a piece of paper and went and fought. And then, you know, really got sucked into addiction and stuff and started, you know, living a wild lifestyle and never really took up training. And then, you know, later on in life, I kept getting in trouble and finally accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior and tried to get on a path of success and started training and trying to be a good person. And, you know, ever since then, man, I mean, I've been super blessed and, you know, I'm getting to live out my dreams. So, yeah, I was lost, broken, busted, disgusted, defeated. And, you know, I give my life over to Christ and things have been so much better since then. Everything's coming together.
There's nothing better than somebody who fights in the streets who now gets paid to fight in a cage.
Man, I'm telling you, it's so much better this way. I don't have to worry about getting in trouble. And like you said, I get some money off of it now.
Exactly. So I'm curious, you said from the northeast corner of Alabama, are you a Crimson Tide or are you a War Eagle?
Actually, War Eagle, man. My entire family on both sides are Auburn fans. I'm not super, super invested into it like I used to be. I kind of, after I quit partying and stuff and took up fighting and took it a lot more serious, man, it really takes up most of my time, energy, and attention. I watch all the cards I can and just really ain't into football and sport, or that kind of sports as much anymore.
Sure. My brother, who went to one of those two colleges, went to get gas. He was on scholarship. He played on the baseball team. He was pretty good. He went to pump gas. He gave him the credit card, and they said, "You're not welcome here." And wouldn't let him buy gas there.
Wow.
He went to Alabama. He had an Alabama credit card, and they were an Auburn fan, and they wouldn't sell him the gas.
Oh, my goodness, man. Yeah, that's a bit much.
They're some
diehard fans on both sides, man. It's like it's almost like a little mini Civil War in Alabama because of them.
No, for sure. And for those that don't know, you do, I do. You know, they take that serious. Alabama-Auburn rivalry is, if not the number one, it's definitely in the tops. I mentioned about the first time you got in the octagon. Talk about that experience. Well, I think it was in February, the domination that you performed and what was going through your mind.
Are you talking about my first experience ever or not, or this first UFC fight.
The first UFC fight that was in February.
Oh yeah, so man, like, you know, I'd had experience at the Apex, you know, because I'd been there in September fighting on the Contender Series, so I had a little bit of advantage and got there and got to Vegas and everything, and you know, weight cut went pretty decent. The whole experience was just a lot better than my Contender Series experience, and you know, we got over there and got to the venue on fight day, and I felt a lot better than just all the way around, health wise, everything. I just felt better that day, and as far as like the way I was moving and stuff in the back, I mean, I felt fresh, I felt good, I felt ready to go. And then right before, probably, I don't know, about 15 minutes before we started, before we was ready to walk, I started getting in my head a little bit, just, you know, so much pressure, the whole world's watching you, you know, you don't want to perform poorly. So I started getting in my head a little bit, but, you know, I kind of just stopped myself and had a long conversation, you know, with myself, really, and I was kind of like, man, like, do you not enjoy this? Like, do you just enjoy the win, or do you not enjoy fighting anymore? Like, why are you so worried about winning? And I just kind of stopped myself and was like, you know, no, I genuinely love fighting. Like, and I just come to the realization, like, you know, that my last, I don't know, about my whole pro career, I've been so consumed with winning and my performance that I haven't really taken the time to enjoy the fight and have a good time. And that's one thing I did before my last one. I stopped myself long enough to gather my mind and tell myself to, you know, just have a good time. Don't worry about winning. Don't worry about losing. Just get in there and be myself and try to have as much fun. And this was going to be my debut, make this experience as good as I possibly could. And it was, man, I had so much fun. So that's something I'm going to try to take with me the rest of my career, is just stop myself before I go out there and make myself get in that position mentally where I'm ready to have fun and I'm not so consumed with the outcome, you know?
Right.
So Trevor, I mean, this question, maybe the first time I've ever thought this.
Asked a question?
Yeah, ask a question on this program. You know, and secondly, it's the first time I've actually thought about this question. So I'm asking you, it's raw, so it's brand new, so I haven't had time to vet it. But, you know, a lot of fighters, they get in and they talk about how, you know, if they didn't have fighting, they'd be locked up or dead, I mean, because of the streets. And then you have guys that get in, they treat it just like a professional sport, and they either manufacture hate for their opponent or they summon some kind of evil to like hurt another human. But with your case being like so godly and a preacher, and you know, is it hard to like go in there knowing that you're going to hurt somebody for, you know, that's, you know, like, does that come into play on the emotional side of like, this is a human that you're going in, and yes, it's a job and it's a career, but Does the emotional side ever take place?
No, sir, not beforehand. I try not to think like that. There is times it has, like, I was scheduled for my last fight. I was scheduled to fight a gentleman named Alex Reyes, and he'd got injured. But man, he'd been through a lot. Like, he'd been through like a 4 or 5 year layoff because like he'd got a stem cell shot in his back, and it about paralyzed him. So there was. I kind of felt sorry for that guy, and so there has been times in my career that I've kind of not wanted to fight the person out of, you know, feelings or whatever, like just their story, you know. But for the most part, man, I try not to think about them kind of things. You might get hurt if you get in there worrying about hurting somebody, but I mean, definitely after the fight, you know, I'm concerned about my opponents and everything, and want to win, but you know, I also want them to, you know, come out without, you know, in being too messed up.
Let me take Matt's question and change it a little bit and ask it this way. How do you turn on and off the violence?
Really, man. I mean, that's a good question. That's just something that a lot of people are born with different kind of instincts, and I mean, I've got a violent instinct in me, you know what I mean? Like, God created people like, you know, King David and warriors and people like that, and I feel like I've got that spirit instilled in me.
Well, give me your thoughts, A, on your opponent, and I know it was another change, you know, of your opponent on this fight, and the thoughts on an early start time.
So, I mean, as far as the opponent switch goes, I mean, it's, I'm just going to go in there and be Trevor Peak, man. You know what I mean? Like, if it, if I am who I say I am and who I believe I am, then it shouldn't really matter, you know. But as stylistically, it's a tougher matchup. I mean, he's better than I feel like he's more skilled, more dangerous than my previous opponent. I don't think he quite has as much power as my previous opponent did, but I mean, he should be more dangerous. I'm expecting this first round to be just complete fireworks, honestly.
And the fact that it's an early start time, you'll probably fight somewhere around 12:30, where normally it would be, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about it, man. But just because, like when my testosterone levels and stuff spike up at the end of the camp, I kind of have trouble like sleeping at times. And I'm hoping if I can get a good night's sleep, it ain't that big of a deal. But you know, I guess the main concern is it cuts into my rehydration time, really. And I mean, especially like on the regional scene, man, I've been accustomed to fighting main event for a good while now. So on the regional scene, I haven't been fighting till, 9:30 to 10:30 p.m. So, I mean, I've had like an instrumental amount of time to get rehydrated. And these last couple fights, I think I fought around 3 or 4, like you said, and I felt decent then. But this one's like, I mean, we got to get up early and get on over there. And I just hope I'm feeling good from the rehydration process by then, and I'm awake.
For sure. Well, enjoy the process. I know the reward comes Saturday when you get back in the octagon. Thank you very much for your time. I know we have your address. We're going to send you a care package from 8-Man Strong, as well as some cool stuff from Bucked Up Energy Drink. And we'll see you in the media room on Saturday.
Cool. Sounds good, man. Thank you, guys. I appreciate y'all having me on.
Thank you for the time. Trevor Peake, back in the octagon.
Maybe one of the most
Saturday.
Polite guys we've ever had on this program.
Well, I mean, if you watch the video, you know, afterwards, you know, when he got interviewed and all that kind of stuff, you know, he's just one of those kids from Alabama.
Yeah.
You know, the whole demeanor, but his nickname, I don't know if it was his nickname or he said the word violence or whatever. That's why I threw it the way he did. You know, how do you turn that and violence. Turn that violence yeah. off? All right, let's go hit a break. When we come back, we will get our weekly update from Jason Knight, last night's Ultimate Fighter episode, as Michael Chandler, Team Chandler, moves to 4-0. This is Knockout Radio, brought to you by 8-Man Strong and Stat Time.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is R.W. McQuarters from the Chicago Bears, and you're talking sports with Randy Harris.
Got bills? Looking for work? But nobody is hiring. StaffZone is. As the leading provider of commercial construction, industrial, and special event staffing throughout the Southeast and Texas, StaffZone has plenty of work to go around, and they need you now. Don't wait. Go now to www.thestaffzone.com and find a branch closest to you. Work today, get paid today. That's the StaffZone way.
Tour de Pizza is back as Tournament Day Pizza, located at 170 47th Avenue Northeast in St. Petersburg. Located inside the Racquet Club of St. Pete, we've proudly been serving the greater St. Petersburg area for the last 15 years and running. Tour de Pizza, full menu, full liquor bar, same great pizza, Tour de Pizza. Visit us online at tourdepizza.com. And remember, a slice a day keeps the doctor away. Tour de Pizza, it's where winners eat.
8-Man Strong is not simply about the biggest or strongest. It's about those who have survived true lows, suffered, faced demons real or in their heads, and are fighting to come back against it all. If you live with a passion for greatness and strength and resilience towards all obstacles that may attempt to derail you, if you are bold and aggressive in the pursuit of the things you want in life, if you are meant to overcome everything that stands in your path of reaching your goals, then you are 8-Man Strong.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Robbie Gold from the Chicago Bears, and you're talking sports with Randy Harris.
All right, we are back here live from Tournament to Pizza. We need A, new liners, and B, we need to date the liners. So, like, we need them to say, this is Robbie Gold from the 1922 Chicago Bears. I think, isn't he with, like, San Fran now, or... I mean, he's definitely moved on, so we need to update that. That's your job, Matthew.
First, we need to turn on the heater in this place. I'm freezing.
You're the knucklehead that goes and gets in ice buckets and takes ice baths. And because of you, I will give you this much. I've already said I refuse. I will never get in your ice bucket.
Okay.
Ever.
Right.
I may do somebody else's, but I won't get in yours. But I have started taking colder showers.
Have you? Very good.
Typically, I burn myself. You know, in my whole life, I would have third-degree burns on my back. I like it hot.
Okay.
But, you know, and Sean has always taken, you know, cold baths, cold showers.
Did you notice what's on my back today?
Yeah.
I forgot that my daughter.
Two juvenile delinquents drew on you.
My daughter drew back tattoos with permanent marker, apparently. And I forgot about it. And so, but that's what we do as parents, right? I mean, that's why grown men walk around with, like, painted toenails and fingernails, you know, and their kids want to paint their fingers and their nails. So that's what you do as a father.
I've never let my kids draw on me.
Your daughter never colored your toenails or
no.
You painted them or drew on you,
no.
Put makeup on you?
No.
Never?
No.
That's a lie. There's no way.
What do you mean it's not a lie?
Because you would do anything for Emily. Like, she's your world. So if she wanted to play dress up, you got to think back. I mean, you're a little old. Think about coming off the Titanic.
I'm pretty sure. Well, that's a bad word right about now.
So I brought it up because I'm cold like I was on the Titanic.
Holy crap. What's going on?
I'm freezing.
Not you. I don't care about you.
Yeah, the Titanic.
This submarine that's lost.
Like, how incredible is the story, though? I mean, like, did you realize that the Titanic is 12,000 feet below the surface of the Earth? I mean, I didn't know the history.
Let me be honest and upfront. I don't watch the news.
Okay.
I haven't watched the news in probably 3 years.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know anything. So I don't know. Is this little sub like a thing you put in your bathtub and they put people on it to go look for the Titanic?
It's basically a tube.
It's like, I saw a picture.
So it's like Jeff Bezos when it went up to, you know, the Blue Horizon went up to Mars or, you know, the moon. It's kind of like that experience where you have a tube and you have a bench. And there's five people that sit in a pressurized tube.
And my son told me it's being controlled by like a little Xbox controller.
Yeah, basically like a controller. You know, that you would find on like a video game console.
Wow.
And, but I mean, that's, so, I mean, I saw like a Facebook meme and, you know, they're all over, right? I mean, it's just crazy. But when you have that kind of money and you have this ability to like have these experiences that the general population will never be able to afford.
All right. I don't want this to sound like I'm being funny, smart, any of that. Okay. Because this is bad news.
It's life or death.
It's life or death.
Right.
But what I would hope people would learn from this. A, if you have this kind of money and you are going to do something like this, have a trailer sub behind you.
Yeah, you should go with
like, more than one sub.
Like a spare.
Right, exactly.
Like, if you don't take off on a trip without.
And then like the movie The Hunt for Red October, you can have the other sub pull up on top. You can crawl out. You can get on the movable, workable.
But at 12,000 feet, I don't think you're getting out of anything. The pressure would kill you. I mean, it's the equivalent of like, well, 1,000 elephants standing on your chest. I mean, the pressure.
Right. So from what I understand, I think it was on the news that we just heard here on the network, they believe they have 24 hours more of air.
Of oxygen on board.
So, and again, you probably don't know this either because I'm not into the news and you just don't pay attention. What's the deal? They can't come up?
Well, they think they lost communication. They think they had
an
electrical shortage.
But what do you need? Isn't there an up button on your remote control?
I don't know if the rope goes 12,000 feet to pull you back up to the surface. I mean, we really don't know enough about it.
Well, obviously, yeah.
But I mean, if you had money was no object, Randy Harris,
yep,
and you could do an adventure like that, maybe not just
that. No, I'd pay for my daughter's wedding.
Well, yeah, that's the same price. These go for $250,000 a ticket, starting at $250,000 a ticket. There's a billionaire on board from the report.
All right. So what's the question? Would I do that?
But if you had unlimited money,
would you do it
for the life experience?
No.
I mean, you were going to jump out of a plane with Greg Jackson.
Well, I wasn't going to jump with Greg. We went at the same time.
But you're
I wouldn't have tied myself to Greg. No, I would have zero interest for two reasons. One, I was in the middle of the ocean for 6 months, right? I've already done something very similar. And B, I started to get on a submarine one time. I didn't get completely into it. And I said, nope, see ya.
You're claustrophobic.
It's Brad. You know, I don't think no, zero chance. If they would have put me on a sub, I would have gone AWOL.
Really?
Yeah. It's bad. I mean, you've got to really train yourself. Now, when I was on my ship, I didn't see the sun for days and weeks. You know, I didn't go outside. So it's very similar. The only difference is, you know, I'm on a 340-foot whatever the dimensions were. You know, this is about 6 inches. You know, you literally can't, you know, so no, I would absolutely never. I don't know if you watched last weekend's UFC, and I need to start taking notes, okay? Because there's some things that have happened that is just brutal. Referee, I don't remember which one. I'm hoping it's not one of the refs I'm going to dinner with on Friday.
Yeah, that'd be awkward if you're about to say it.
I'll say it to his face. You know, you know me. I don't care. I will always say what's on my mind. It may not be right, but I will always say what I believe. A, he doesn't take a point away after opponent A throws a leg kick to a downed opponent. Then the chucklehead commentators, and I don't remember which one. So
Felder.
I don't remember which one.
It was Paul Felder.
Was it? Did I already say that?
It was Felder. It was Felder.
Who said something about, well, it was only a glancing blow.
Right. And then,
listen, Chuckles, if it's an illegal strike, take the freaking point. People are going to continue to do the crap that they do if you don't
punish them.
Punish them.
Right.
Then at the end of the fight, and I put this on a Facebook or a tweet, and somebody called me out, and I said, Chuckles, I was joking. And they said, yeah, we know. But then the guy who threw the illegal kick ends up losing at the end of, I think it was round two, after, I don't know, roughly somewhere between 700 and 700 non-response blows to the face.
Right.
I think something should be done with referees and judges, and I'm going to dinner with two of my close judge friends who have been called out numerous times.
Yep.
This referee let him take 7 punches to the noggin.
Yeah.
Something needs to be done. You know what's done right now?
Nothing.
They go to dinner after the fight. Yeah. You know? I mean, it's a tough job, you know, and I've always, when I got called out by the boxing commission here in Florida, and they said, you know, if you blah, 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 then you do it. I went the easy route. I went the judging route. Because I think judging is a whole lot easier than being in the ring, being in the cage, being in control. And do you stop at one punch too early? Do you let it go one punch too late? That's a dilemma.
Well,
what's not a dilemma, let me just, you know, because I'll forget. What's not a dilemma is letting it go 7 punches to the face too late.
So I have a theory on this.
I can hardly wait.
So I've been to dinner with some judges, maybe some of the same judges you may have dinner with, maybe some not. But what I was shocked to find out years ago,
seeing that I invited you to that dinner, I'm pretty sure I know who the judges were.
Well, since you paid for it, you were definitely
there. I'm pretty sure they told me don't ever bring him again.
That's probably what they did say. Okay. But here's the truth of it. Like, what I was shocked to find out was that these judges aren't just employees of right. They're not the employees of the UFC. Like, they have real careers.
Some have retired from their. That's how much money they make as a judge,
right?
And as a referee.
But that's what I expected when I met them, was that they were full time judges, and that's all they did, and that's all they do is to improve on their craft of the fight game and control and scoring and just fairness, right? So, but to be distracted, have family and to have a career that you work Monday through Friday, and then you're flying out on a weekend to do a UFC or a Bellator, isn't there enough money in the budget to put judges into a full-time career where that's all they do? Because Major League umpires make the money.
Yeah, and Major League umpires aren't held accountable. And that's what I've said. NFL, you know, referees, you know, I've always said that they should have to fly to New York on Monday after the game on Sunday and have meetings Tuesday through Thursday. They have other jobs. They're judges, they're police chiefs, they're whatever. So I understand what you're saying. The difference, though, of MLB referees or umpires and referees, judges in an MMA world is MLB, they play all the time. So you're employed all the time. NFL, you're only doing 1, maybe 2 games a week for 18 weeks. So are you going to make enough money in 18 weeks to supplement your entire income for the year? Case with some of these judges and referees that we hang out with, you know, if you're only doing 20 events a year, even if you're making top dollar of $1,000, $1,500, is that enough when you're making whatever as an accountant, a professor, you know, or whatever?
So do referees wear cups?
No.
you don't wear protective gear. I mean, the umpires wear face mask and just ask them.
It was almost, almost a good first hour. Even after being corrected by Loretta Swit, it was still a great first hour until you had to ruin it in the last
minute. Maybe the refs would be more apt to jump in and stop the fight if you got protective gear on.
No.
You don't want to take a kick to the groin while you're trying to stop a fight.
First of all, it's not like you're going to run in the middle of two that are about 2 feet apart and then get kicked in the head.
Well, but if the guy's taking seven punches to the face unnecessarily, you might get the eighth.
Well, that's not true. If you know how to ref, and you're in the right position and you can get over there, all you legally have to do is put your hand on the other fighter. All right, stop. Unless you're Joe Marquis, you stop the fight.
Well, Joe Marquis likes to
hold on a little bit longer.
Twist is just to show dominance.
Yeah. that is Joe. And a great episode of WWE where the Usos, you know what Uso stands for? Do you watch wrestling at all?
Yeah, watch it.
All right, so they go by the name Usos. Okay, they're the ones. Blah, 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 blah. Roman Reigns, the cousin. Right. Blah, 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 blah. Usos in Samoan means
bone.
Brother.
Oh.
And they're brothers.
Because in Portuguese, it means bone.
Well, I didn't ask in Portuguese. I asked in Samoan. All right, 1 hour down, thank God. 2 hours to go. Coming up out of the break, we'll go back up to Jacksonville. I believe it's your boy, Philly Fresh.
Is that a shout-out for Trevor? Thank God.
This is Knockout Radio, brought to you by 8 Man Strong.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Olympic gold medalist Christy Yamaguchi, and you're talking sports with Randy Harris.
8-Man Strong is not simply about the biggest or strongest. It's about those who have survived true lows, suffered, faced demons real or in their heads, and are fighting to come back against it all. If you live with a passion for greatness and strength and resilience towards all obstacles that may attempt to derail you, if you're bold and aggressive in the pursuit of the things you want in life, if you are meant to overcome everything that stands in your path of reaching your goals, then you are 8-Man Strong.